me with your car. Go on and hit me with your car. Hit me with your car and drive away. Hit me with your car.
Welcome to another installment of Are You Into Bus Stuff?
I have a dream. Hit me with your car. Drive away. It's the only comedy podcast about traffic deaths. My name is Ben Carnero. Hit me
with your car. And I'm Lucas Riley, and thank you for being here on our very, very momentous, I don't think we did this last year. This is our official Martin Luther King Jr. Day episode. Play American music.
MLK special.
It's the MLK special. Play some patriotic music.
We did 9/11. We're doing MLK.
We did 9/11.
We love MLK. I don't have a single bad thing to say about Martin Luther King Jr.
Of course not.
However, we do have a lot of traffic deaths to talk about that took place on streets called Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue.
Why is Boulevard. It Boulevard. It's usually Boulevard.
Is it always a Boulevard?
That's a good question. You've got the data.
Okay, so I didn't pull that, though. Let me fix this real quick.
We're going to deliver to you, listener, a tally of all roadway deaths in the Roadway Report database that took place on streets called Martin Luther King Jr., either Boulevard or Avenue. I know the one here in Denver, I believe, is Boulevard. But maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, in Denver, MLK Jr. Boulevard.
Yeah, I think ours is an Avenue. I have so many jokes I want to tell this week, but I'm not going to.
Sure, yeah, I mean...
There's just a lot of good content here, man. Martin Luther King. What a guy. I mean, it's just such a fraught issue, right? Like the history of urban development in America and segregation and cars. Like, there's so much to unpack with MLK as like a traffic deaths podcast. There's just so much going on there.
Yeah, and it's hard to paint, I think, the full picture that we want to. And maybe we need to, you know, buckle up and do some research and... like go deeper into this topic for a special or something, but it's, you know, it's intersectional. Our beat is intersectional with racial justice in a very clear and direct way.
Right. Big time. In a,
but it's hard to riff on.
Right. It is in the context of our lives, right? Like people who grew up in communities without any black people. By virtue of infrastructure investments, this is
and just housing policies
horrifically sad. It's just not very funny, but we do well with that kind of content. I think that's why I'm so excited. But no, I mean it does sort of just leave a poor taste in your mouth, given that we're the beneficiaries of urban segregation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're the children of boomers who ended up in a suburban environment with enough money to access the services that they need via car. I mean, your family always had at least two cars, right? We always had at least two cars. And I think another piece is, you know, with the query that Ben is running right now on Roadway Report, we're going to see how many MLKs are boulevards, how many are avenues, how many are streets, how many are courts, things like that. But it is interesting that we do consider the naming of a street somewhat culturally significant, right? And that makes sense. It's like, okay, it's how we orient ourselves in a place, right? And so calling to image the visage of Martin Luther King Jr., I think is significant, but we'll go a little deeper into like what that means a little bit later. All right, what are the numbers, Ben?
Okay, so pull it open. I just pasted it into the spreadsheet. We'll put this in the show notes, but we have just at first glance, this is just like me pulling this 30 minutes before the episode, 1,068 traffic death crashes on MLK boulevards. So realistically, it's going to be like roughly the same number of deaths. The number of deaths per fatal crash is roughly one. It's like 1.1. So this is something like 1,200 people.
And for what period is this?
Well, technically, the database is 50 years. Here, in fact, sort by the first column. Let me do that. So you'll see there's a few in the 80s. Like, technically, this would date back to 1975. But it appears that the traffic way identifier field wasn't implemented until, let's see.
And is this query for MLK Jr. and Martin Luther King Jr.? Like, have you accounted for different spellings? I'm only seeing MLK in your output.
No, we got MLK, we got Martin Luther King, we got MLK with periods, MLK without periods, case insensitive. I didn't search for Martin L. King. I can search for that real quick.
But that's not, maybe nobody calls him that.
Martin Luther King, one word. That might work.
Mm-hmm. Because this feels like a fewer number than I would expect.
You'd think it would be more than 1,000 traffic deaths, like 1,200 traffic deaths. And, I mean, okay, it does say from the 80s on, but I don't know, how many per year are there in the 80s, and then how many per year are there now, just to see if there's like a trend there.
Mm-hmm. I respect any city that goes for the full title, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Yeah,
that's
look at this.
Most reverent.
This is funny. It's almost exponential. In 2023, there's like 70. And in the first year on record, there's like 5. So obviously there's some data collection confounding going on here.
Certainly. We know this is true across the database. This is just the nature of this data. Is it's collected mostly by police officers, and there are inconsistencies, massive inconsistencies over time, place, and many other variables.
But the last couple years, where there's like, this field is decently accurate, right? We have computers that can tell us, like the cop just pushes a button and the computer checks where he is,
and you're telling me you're gonna trust
down the street.
You're gonna trust a cop to push a button?
I don't know about that. When the data is accurate, it's almost 60 a year, 70 a year kills. Martin Luther King claims 60 lives a year in American cities, mostly in the South.
And if you look at where Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard usually cuts through in our U.S. cities, at least the ones I'm familiar with, it also usually is centered around a high Black population. And we know from looking at the data and from knowing the history of redlining and housing policy and transportation policy of the last nearly 100 years, we know that those are more dangerous areas for people to walk, cycle, and just be outside of a car.
Right, right. There's layers, baby. It's like, we know that living in a Black neighborhood is worse for your health, right? And we know that Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, Avenue, Parkway, that will take you to a Black neighborhood. I mean, in Austin specifically, it is a red line. It is not only a major physical barrier to the built environment, it is a historic red line.
It is in Denver, it is as well. In Northeast Denver, it is a clear dividing line. You can tell the change, not only in the development that happened due to the policies that were in place on either side of the street, but also from the built environment beyond that, right? There's older trees in the white part of town. It's a clear dividing line.
I've always found it really ironic that two of the most dangerous streets in the city center in Austin are Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez. Like, it's their ghosts wreaking vengeance on people.
On hapless Americans.
each of them gets a few kills a year in the city, right? And so that's kind of what got me thinking, like, oh, well, there's one of these in every city, right? And why is it always an arterial? Like, why do we honor the legacies of these people by take, like, with the most violent possible infrastructure? I don't know. It's just surreal. It's surreal and unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is. And it centers the automobile in American life in yet another way. And it's a slap in the face to the legacy of these great leaders. We should have a Cesar Chavez episode, absolutely. But not enough can be said about the contributions of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to our society. And it's a shame that the U.S. government decided to take him out, like they do anyone that begins to have the kind of impact on our society that he was having.
No, I mean, yeah, but amen, brother. It's like he said, all power to the people.
Yeah, and I think it's a disgrace
It's like he said, egads, I think I've buttered these peanuts.
What?
The bit is that I'm going to get him mistaken for other high-profile African-Americans throughout the course of the episode.
I don't know about that.
It's so good. It's such a good bit. Here, one sec. Give me 1 second. I got to grab the coffee off the stove.
I'm going to have to go in a minute, too, to get laundry. Babe, we're podcasting. Babe, oh, I told you, we're podcasting. No worries. I'm going to have to go in like 7 minutes to go get my laundry from the machine.
Oh, like right now?
In yeah, 7 minutes.
Oh,
or I can
oh,
go. Okay. I can go now, so you only have to cut once.
No, I don't care.
Okay.
I'm chilling, brother. I had made myself a big pot of coffee, and I have like the thermos ready, and I was gonna put some. Oh fuck! I need sugar. Fuck.
No, I need sugar. Yeah. I
gotta
drink my coffee. I need sugar.
You'll see. You'll see in a sec.
I'm interested, listener, about the MLK Jr. Boulevard or Avenue or Parkway in your city, because the two in Austin and Denver are quite similar to each other, and I expect the same is true in many U.S. cities, but it might not be true across the board, so let us know, Ben at Roadway Report or Lucas at roadway.report. You can email us there, so let us know. I would love to go to the most walkable Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in the United States. That would be a nice way to spend this day.
No, I had made myself a big fucking thing of coffee, and I needed coffee. I have the day off, so I was going to make, I put some whiskey in it.
Nice.
And some cream and sugar, and I'm going to be coasting the rest of the day.
Excelente.
Oh, fuck, it's a lot of whiskey. for MLK, man.
Yeah, I mean, I would say
boy.
That, yeah, pour one out for our boy. Definitely our boy. Man, just a tragic loss. I mean, so many losses around that time what was a turning point in United States culture, and especially in a moment right now where we're just like full mask off imperialist fascism. It's nothing new. It's not the first time that Congress has handed over seemingly unlimited power to a psychopathic maniac who wants to kill brown people and take their land. But it is really sad in context of the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the LGBTQ movement, and the movement to take back the streets.
Yeah, the goon movement.
I think it's the alt-goon movement, yeah.
No, I mean, we're squarely right-wing.
I think all listeners will know that that's the case.
No, I mean, it is so tragic, right? Like, that era was tense. You know, a lot of people stuck their neck out and were killed. A lot of people died. And then, you know, we just, like, pretend
that it was
this, like, peaceful thing that happened.
Yeah, well, and they pimp even the words of these great leaders, like they pimp that quote of Martin Luther King Jr.'s that the arc of morality is a long one, but it bends towards justice. We've talked about that on the podcast before. That's a Martin Luther King quote that is often used to sanitize American violence and imperialism.
Bingo, baby.
And I maybe it's true. It's sort of a nice thought if you take a further step back, but I don't know. We're like the dinosaurs or the, I don't know what they were called, but you know, the creatures that were first crawling out of the ocean, like, do they have less peace than us? I feel like it was more peaceful to be like a water lizard that just like, whose grandpa was the first guy to come up on land. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, that's the duality of man, baby. Like the beauty of humanity juxtaposed with our capacity to do great harm. You know, that's, yeah, it all comes back to that, doesn't it?
Yep. Yep. I mean, there's both pleasure and pain to strapping that car battery to your genitals.
That's pleasure. That's pleasure.
Who would give a minute's mirth to wail a week or sell eternity to get a toy?
Is that Shakespeare?
That's Shakespeare, baby. That's the rape of Lucretia.
Wow.
Or is it? It might not be the rape of Lucretia, but...
Yikes. Whoa.
Or the rape of Lucretia. I don't know. Shakespeare, anyone who can scan iambic pentameter, please write in and let me know if it's Lucrece or Lucretia or...
Lucretia! I hardly know her!
I guess Lucretia, when I transition, that'll be my name.
Oh, good God. Okay. What are we here to talk about today? We're here to talk about the fact that if you live in a black neighborhood, you're more likely to be hit by a car. We're here to talk about the history of redlining and segregation. We're here to talk about the canonization of Martin Luther King on infrastructure that is like actively keeping the black man down. I don't know. There's just a lot going on there. I don't know where to start.
Yeah, we're here to talk about, yeah, the intersection between automobile infrastructure and racial violence, I think is like the big takeaway. We're also here to laugh at ourselves and laugh at you, listener, who are just a vicious sicko for listening to this podcast. You know who you are.
But I mean, I can personally attest that like it's racial injustice that sort of led me to the ideological conclusions that we reach on this podcast. Like, if you want a society that is just in terms of like racial and economic equity, you run the bus more often. It's like one of the few things you can do that will work, right? Or like pay people's rent, right? Like pay people's rent, run the bus more often. Martin Luther King.
Yeah, it is.
Rosa Parks.
Yeah.
Among the thousands of black people who ride the bus.
Millions. I mean, over the course of history, millions.
What percentage of white people have never been on a bus, and what percentage of black people have never been on a bus?
You crunch those numbers. It would be amazing if Roadway Report could spit out something like that.
I mean, what percentage of black people are middle class now?
Like 20?
What percentage of black people are
15?
Rolling in it.
I don't know. I need to go turn my laundry over because I am not rolling in it. And I do not have a washing machine in my house. So
yeah. I'll be here. I will talk to the listener. I got some good shit.
Sick. Listener, be careful. He's an extremely manipulative and damaging individual, and if he takes your mind and takes you where he wants to take you, you may never come back.
So much of our conception of class in the United States is racialized, like because of white supremacy and these ideologies that underpin the American colonial project. Our cultural understanding of race, it closely relates to class and class society and status and our position within the world, like physically, Where am I going with this? I don't really know. But Martin Luther King envisioned a world where people lived as equals. And so much of what this podcast is about is like these high-speed roadways are murderous and they act as physical barriers to mobility. We've created a system of investment and public policy priority that drives people further apart, that disintegrates and destroys communities, despite being earmarked as transportation infrastructure. Like, this morning, I traveled 1.5 miles from the east side to the west side, a trip that 50 years ago on a bicycle, or in my instance, on a scooter, would have been safer. It would have been easier, it would have been faster, and it would have been safer because there wouldn't have been any fucking traffic lights. You would have sort of just zipped right to your way. It would have taken 4 minutes. And today, it's like you've got to go through a maze of crackheads and a bike lane that keeps disappearing and like drivers going 40 miles an hour. And it's like it's the same story everywhere in America. It's physically harder to get around than it used to be as a result of these fucking freeways and these fucking arterials. Unless you are rich as shit and are fortunate enough to live way out in the sticks. It just sucks. The whole shit sucks. And then we fucking slap Martin Luther fucking King's name on a fucking boulevard. And we say we've reached like a racially equitable society. It's a farce. It's a farce on its face. It's just such a perversion of moral justice to put his name on like a murder street in every city in America, in like a physical barrier between you and economic opportunity. You've got to look at Martin Luther King's fucking name. It's just such a joke. It's sad. It's super fucking sad. Shall we look at some traffic deaths? Shall we lighten the mood and look at some traffic deaths? Got 1,068. God, Jesus Christ. Here's one in Austin. Let's pull it open. Pedestrian. White. I wasn't expecting that. I gotta admit, that's the first thing I was checking. Wasn't expecting that. 49 years old. Died 29 minutes later.
Love I'm that. Back, baby.
Hit by a 52-year-old woman in a car.
God, what wow. I wouldn't give to be hit by a 52-year-old woman with a car.
Kia.
The Kia to surviving the car crash is to not
drive
get
a
hit.
Kia. It's to drive a Kia over the pedestrian.
Yeah. Remember, sometimes you're the windshield and sometimes you're the bug.
No, I was just talking about America, car crashes. How our priorities in transportation investment create a less equitable society, and how it's harder to get around than it used to be if you're just like a person. Here, I got a couple resources.
Yeah.
Let me send you.
I'm looking at, there's a resource if you Google listener, and we can add the link to the show notes. We've discussed it before, but it's from the University of Richmond. It's at richmond.edu, and it is called Mapping Inequality. And it is, they have maps, redlining maps for just about every U.S. city. And it's a really, really great resource. They notate not only the maps themselves and what was redlined and how the maps were drawn, but they also include the clarifying remarks from the initial documentation and legislation that set these things into motion. So, for example, in Northeast Denver, north of what is now Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, there were two blocks that were not zoned residential. And then north of that, which is all of this is now residential. I guess there is like the York Street Yards over there. So some of it is mixed use now. It's like abandoned warehouses. that became mixed use. You know, there's like co-working spaces and a brewery and coffee shops, but most of it is unbroken residential. And then north of 40th Avenue is all unbroken residential. But the clarifying remarks include an area occupied entirely by industrial workers from the packing plants, stockyards to the west, and other plants nearby. It has a wide range and variety of houses, from cheap frames to some fair bungalows. Many are ill-kept with outside toilets. Real estate men pay little attention to the area. Demand for homes is entirely wage earners of the low-income brackets who do not mind the stretch from the stockyard districts. The inhabitants include an infiltration of wage earners, and that's an amazing piece of so much of this legislation is they actually wrote in who had infiltrated these areas. So usually it says like Mexicans or Negroes is the word that is used to refer to black people. And this area, I guess, was not black at the time, but it was redlined and became a predominantly black neighborhood.
The history of Austin's, the history of the treatment of African Americans in Austin, Texas is so absurdly fucked up. Like, just the more you get into it, the worse it gets. Yeah, for a city with a reputation of being socially progressive, it's bad. Oh, it's big. It's bad, dude.
Yeah. I mean, the white flight to the suburbs in Austin was particularly pronounced.
But we're back. We took it back. I think that's something we hadn't even fucking talked about is white flight, and then subsequently reverse white flight.
Yeah, which is kind of what the process we're still kind of at the tail end of now.
We are the reverse white flight. We're just two urban gentlemen
who want to live in a walkable community.
Yeah, exactly. But still, it just sucks just as much, like, just by virtue of...
Well, I mean, here's what happened. We redlined urban neighborhoods that were successful urban neighborhoods that developed pre-war, right? We redlined them. So we forced people who wanted to stay in their neighborhoods into neighborhoods where you could not get a loan to improve your building. You could not get a loan to build a new building. And you just generally couldn't improve the neighborhood because of how the policies were written. So these historically black neighborhoods became fairly run down. And then across other inequalities like income and wealth inequality and prejudice and discrimination in hiring practices, etc., and all of the other institutional barriers that have kept black families from obtaining and holding on to generational wealth, these neighborhoods became like the only urban spaces that were for black people, and they became somewhat run down because of the policies that made it difficult even for those who had resources to improve those neighborhoods. Then you get this wave of white middle class kids in the next generation, me and Ben, for instance, who grew up in the suburbs, at least partially, and grew to hate it and wanted to live in an urban environment characterized by walkability and community and diversity. And the only places where at least folks on the lower income spectrum who were in that suburban class could move were these black neighborhoods, right? And these historically, these neighborhoods that have been historically excluded from some of the urban renewal efforts that made the rest of our cities places that people like Ben and I don't want to live. But it's the last like remaining stronghold for a lot of black and brown families, like holding onto these neighborhoods as a piece of identity, as a piece of like local power. And so when corporate bosses buy up apartments and then Ben and I move in, we destroy the neighborhood. And it's just really sad. And then there's like, you know, the four stages of gentrification. I've definitely been part of several of them in my life. And yeah, it's really sad.
Anyway, all right, time to riff. Sorry, gentrification. It's time to riff.
Gentrification, that's F to M, right?
Gentrification is when you move to Brooklyn and you hate your dad and you drink until like 3:30 in the morning.
And you kiss boys.
And you kiss boys. Yeah. Gentrification.
No, gentrification is when you're born with lady parts and you transition to a gentleman, right? Gentrification.
Yeah. Well, it's like the more you read about the highway system and like the development of the highway system, the more it's like, how on earth did they get away with this? It's just so horrible. Like, they knew what they were doing. You know, like, the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's part and parcel of what's happening right now with an armed militia that's just, like, snatching people off the streets. And I'm hearing a lot of people that I would describe as liberals saying, how could they do this? How could they let this happen? How is this happening? It's through the same violent and white supremacist channels as the rest of it, as knocking down an entire thriving black community. If you take Bronzeville, for instance, knocking down huge sections of a thriving black community to build a freeway, to build the Dan Ryan Expressway. Like, it's the same violence.
Yeah. No, bingo. And it's the incredulity which sort of illustrates, like, you're insulated from the impact of these racist public policies. This violence isn't inflicted upon you. So to bear witness to violence becomes this affront to the senses. Traffic deaths. I mean, there was a train crash in Spain this morning. Like, 20 people died on a high-speed train. And five times as many people will die in America today as a result of our transportation investments. Right? It's like there's going to be a vigil and shit. You know, it's like a Cry Me a River situation. It's a real 9/11 over there. But five times as many people are going to die today in America because of our car-oriented spaces, because of our failures in public administration.
We've had over 300 9/11s worth of traffic fatalities since 9/11.
Cry me a 9/11.
Well, for me, all of this makes it clear that everything, like, all of our organization needs to be centered around class and around our status as workers and as renters and as the people that keep, like, these systems running. I want to highlight, take us way back, listener, take you back to 1919, and talk about how our car-based infrastructure makes it difficult to do this, to interrupt our transportation network in a significant way. Because in 1919 and 1920, the Denver Tramway became involved in a bitter dispute with workers over its wages. The workers wanted better pay, and they went out and they, like, tossed a bunch of streetcars over. They just knocked them down. So the city's elite that worked downtown and the government workers that worked at the Capitol couldn't get to work. And that's really hard to do when everybody drives their own car. But it is something that I've been reflecting on a lot recently, just in terms of, like, and I've seen a lot of people reaching out online and saying, like, how do we do something about this? And my impulse is always, like, let's go block the street. And I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying it's interesting when there's a group of workers that control our ability to get around town. If they say no, it's hard to get around town, but as an individual user of a transportation network that drives a personal vehicle, withholding that, the usage of that, I don't know, may be powerful. What do you think?
I don't know. I hope someone hacks all the cars and makes them not work anymore. Now that they all have a computer in them, I feel like that's the best equivalent we have. I mean, we can obviously physically block the roads, and that's, of course, what the gooners will do, but... You know, it's so dangerous, right? I was reading a resource called Driving Jim Crow, and it touches on, like, racial stereotypes of the Jim Crow. But one of them was the Cadillac. Here it is. Why is it that so many observed in the intersection of race and cars when he published a study that derived from the perennial student question of those enrolled in race relations classes. Why is it that so many Negroes drive Cadillacs? The study concluded, this is in the 50s, the study concluded that the assumption of the Negro and his Cadillac proved unfounded. We can surmise that the racial automobile narratives marked with white surveillance of black consumption, just as the so-called racial trait of African-American overappreciation of foods such as fried chicken and watermelon obscured black poverty that did not admit adequate diets. The pejorative narrative that mocked African-Americans as extravagant for buying expensive Cadillacs defied the economic status of most defied the economic status of most black Americans and veiled a white desire for black immobility.
Wow. Yeah, that's extremely salient.
I just thought that was interesting.
That's something that's on my list in an interesting way is the centering of masculinity around consumerism and that central consumer good being the automobile. And then adding the intersection with race, it's a status. Yeah, that's dynamite.
It is a status symbol, and I mean, particularly when your community has been physically divided from your access to prosperity, it's like there's so much entanglement of like the danger of accessing public space in black communities, and then your physical separation from prosperity without the status symbol that is the automobile.
Yeah.
Bingo.
I mean, a lot of it...
Batman?
I think some of it... I have been reflecting on the development of masculine culture, and, you know, I do a lot of feminist reading, and I've been thinking a lot about Hugh Hefner. And the movement of Playboy, which sort of, like, put this transgressive masculinity into play that everyone could be a playboy, right? They sort of invented this democratization of this idea that men could be playboys, even if it was just a fantasy aspiration, right? And it one of the big pieces that it allowed for was it was a transgressive masculinity that wasn't deviant enough to be gay, right? Like 50s and 60s culture was terrified of queerness and homosexuality because it interrupted the nuclear family that was they were trying to build like this economy on, right? And they centered this masculinity around consumerism and the objectification and commodification of yes, women's bodies, but also this lifestyle that was largely centered around the purchase of a large automobile, right? It became and as like that proliferated into culture and replicated itself through so many other publications to the like Lamborghini driving douchebag that you can conjure in your mind today as that like sort of like toxic objectifying women driving a fast car like masculinity, right? There's so many forces that conjure that lead to the image that you might conjure today that embodies that but it was part and whole of a system that required everyone to have a car. They needed to encourage everyone to get a car, and this was one way that the culture did that and just accepted consumerism wholesale as like the foundation of our society. That's what I got there. Adding the lens of race to that, and particularly around how in this writer's view, black folks were driving, white folks thought black folks were driving Cadillacs, but that wasn't concurrent with, the statistics and was just another means to divide us and segregate society.
This is just an interesting passage from that blog. One of the 20th century consequences of the history of slavery, blackface minstrelry, which bears an overwhelming influence on Lucas and I's artistic
careers. Well, we're musical theater boys, and musical theater was built half on that.
It's so true, though. It's like it's just so wild that it was so recent. Like Abbott and Costello are just like a sliver of. It's as if they. It's as if we're only allowed to go back so far. And our whole history starts like right when they stop doing blackface. And so all of our like comedy heroes are just like the very next generation of, or like they probably got their start in blackface.
A lot of the early musical theater and entertainments of like the 1910s and 1920s were either created by some of the same people that were making minstrel, it was like direct citations, like this is where this is from. It is.
Yeah. Blackface minstrel. Sorry. One of the 20th century consequences of the history of slavery, minstrelry, and the overdetermination of the color line was the continuation and development of a vernacular that accompanied legal racial hierarchy and the status of outsider. For example, in the North, slums, ghettos, and inner cities describe black areas and black neighborhoods in the South. Black areas and black neighborhoods in the South, products of local white supremacy with unpaved streets, underbounded, redlined, and across the railroad tracks, were branded as black town, colored town, the bottom, or the quarters, among various colloquial expressions. White residential areas were collectively referred to as the suburbs. Just interesting, just food for
bingo.
Thought.
And then the culture that was pushed in those suburbs, at least for men, was this culture of, like, you have a wife, you contribute to society, you are a square on one side of your face, but on this other side, you have this transgression that is allowed, which is this fantasy of being a playboy. And this is still so true of so many men that I have relationships with, straight men that I have relationships with, is, like, they're just good people, and they just want to provide for themselves. If they have a family, they have this, you know, desire to do that too. But there's also this, like, I don't know, there's so much gambling and so much sex and so much obsession with consumerism, whether the item is a car or a PlayStation or whatever the case may be, like the identity is centered around some consumer good.
Yeah, one of the stories in this article is about how how it used to be a rite of passage at the local high school to like drive your car, find a black paperboy on his bicycle, and then like basically bump him with your car and then drive away, or like kick his shit to the ground and then drive away. That's like,
yep. And
that's how, that's dead ass how it feels like trying to access public urban space. It's like, don't think that shit has gone away. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's baked into our society, and, you know, the sort of neoliberal cultural movement. I don't know, maybe like 1990s to today.
It's just marginally less racialized now. It's like, oh, well, maybe we've made some progress on racial hierarchy in society, but really it's just a lot more of the same. It's just a lot more of the same. And when you try to access public space at the human scale, you get, you know, like confronted constantly with the violence of the systems that exist. You know, it feels silly saying that as someone who like chooses to not drive, right? Virtually nobody does. Like white, black, Latino, indigenous. It's like, it doesn't matter who
Shout
you are.
Shout out my Asian homies.
All right. If you can afford,
MLK Day.
MLK, yeah, not your day, Asians. If you can afford to have a car, right? If you can afford to get yourself into safety, you do it. It doesn't matter who you are, unless you're some kind of sick freak.
I mean, you
some kind of sick fucking fixie freak.
I think you can associate with this feeling, like you're. Your gal pal drives around, and you probably are understanding of that.
She doesn't want to be. It's because she doesn't want to be molested, and she doesn't want to drive. Yeah. It's like, she doesn't want to die. Like, she doesn't want to be hit by a car, and she doesn't want to be like sexually
Why not?
Harassed. So I get it.
Exactly. Yeah, you get it. And
I don't know.
I think that those of us,
but like, if you live in a city with public transportation, it's like, I don't know. You're probably sexually harassed more often, but like people do it. You're limited, sir. Surely, there's some gendered action going on there. Today's about race. We'll do gender.
We'll solve
next
gender
week.
Next week. Yeah.
Today's about keeping the black man down, and America, man.
Yeah, and
I mean, you could argue that even this ideological space reeks of whiteness. Like,
yeah. Well, it is. It is a white space.
This is reverse white flight, baby. We're coming for your urban environments. For the record, I am not a gentrifier. You cannot make the argument that I am a gentrifier, and here is why. Because I live in the first all-white neighborhood in Austin, Texas. And so here's the thing. What's more racist?
Yeah, like moving into and displacing a black family or living in a like white supremacist enclave.
It's one of those things where the liberals got so liberal. It's just one of those situations where it's like you've reverse engineered racism by going like full circle. Like, okay, I live in an all white neighborhood and it's a pretty nice place to live. So what about that, woke police? You know?
Try and stop me. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's.
And I mean, it bears the importance of understanding the history of urban development in America and the racialized nature of car world and car access and cities and transportation, and the racialized nature of class in American society.
And the
there's just so much going on. There's just so much to unpack that it's impossible to say anything funny without saying something horrible.
Yeah, it's not a funny topic. That's like the primary issue with this podcast, is we're making a funny podcast about something that isn't funny. Abbott and Costello are rolling in their graves.
That's one of the craziest takeaways of running a death map, is like, this is a racialized issue. This is a heavily racialized issue. And it's not like every person who gets hit by a car is a black person, right? But the trends that exist are concerning. And the trends that exist should lead you to believe that white people are driving into cities and hitting black people with their cars. Not all the time, and not as a rule of thumb, but like there are statistically significant trends in the data which should lead you to believe that the people bearing the brunt of the negative impacts of car world are black, Hispanic, indigenous, and low-income people.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole point.
Yeah. And it's like your ability to avoid violence in society squares with your class and racial status.
Okay,
any of this being a surprise in and of itself, the way it was to Lucas and I, is in and of itself a privilege.
Mm-hmm. So a rabbi, a preacher from a black church, and an imam are hit by a car. And the imams... I've got a setup, but I don't have a punchline.
Two black guys and a rabbi are hit by a car. Does anyone go to jail if no one's around to see it?
There you go.
And the answer is no. The answer is most hit-and-run drivers do get away with it.
Yeah, I mean...
So remember, kids, if you hit,
Be sure to run. I mean, although, if you do kill someone, you're unlikely to face jail time, regardless, even if you do stay. If you injure someone, definitely run, because you might get away with it and not get sued.
It's so true, though, and it's like, how many of these are, like, the table in the database is called accidents, right? But how many of these are what you might describe as murders, right? How many
non-zero
fucking dots on the fucking map are modern day lynchings? Definitely some. Yeah, and it's just so horrible, right? Like, when you're out there as a person, you feel it, right? Like, it's a manifestation of violence when someone like tries to force you off the road, right? And how many crashes, how many serious injuries, how many deaths, are how many instances of harassment, right? Like are violent in nature as a percentage of the whole, right? How many of them cannot be called accidents, right? Because the only person left when someone kills you with their car is them to give the police report, right?
Oopsie poopsie,
to do is stay and give a police report and you get away with it. Like, you don't have to do anything special. You won't get in trouble. Especially if they're poor, right? I can't tell you how many times it's like language is so frequently used to rationalize the death of an indigent, houseless person, right? It's like, oh, well, they were homeless, so they were probably just walking around on the road, right? So it's like, well, how many of those homeless people in Austin, how many of those homeless people are black, right? How many of those homeless people used to live on the East Side? And no longer do. People who were forced out of their communities, not served by any kind of
social service or a social safety net.
Social services, right? You can't get health care. So you're forced out of your home. You can't work in the city because it's too dangerous to get there. You can't get help when you eventually go mad, right? And then you're killed in the street, potentially on purpose.
By Linda in her CRV.
And I mean, I personally do believe that 90% of the data in the database is like an accident. The design is the problem. But there's a non-zero amount of violence in the database. You go outside for 10 fucking seconds and you feel it. You know,
or you breathe it for the first 10 years of your life and you are diagnosed with asthma for the rest of your life.
No, it's true. It's true. You know, it's health. It's institutional racism. It's codified in public policy. We create systems. We create these monumental systems to kill black and brown people. And to make them miserable and to like rob their joy and their freedom and their mobility.
Yeah,
it is a sadistic tendency.
A sadistic tendency whose primary goal is to increase the convenience of those who are already in the privileged societal position. And it's not even like comfort, it's just convenience at this point, right? Our world is so cushy and comfortable for rich people in this country. Richest country in the history of the world, right? Like, it's just to save drivers 15 seconds and to make them feel sound and not guilty when they drive a biker off the road and honk their horn and cuss and threaten violence, right? It's to let them off the hook for violence that improves their convenience by just a tiny, tiny bit.
No, and I mean, and it's not like people in these communities didn't speak up when the freeway department came and said, hey, we're going to eminent domain 10,000 houses in your neighborhood to build a single road, despite roads existing, right? Despite there being a road every block, we're going to destroy 10,000 houses in your
I mean, yeah, Robert Moses displaced... I think upwards of millions of people. I mean, the Bronx Expressway displaced hundreds of thousands of people. The Brooklyn-Queens Expressway displaced hundreds of thousands of people.
They're keeping the black man down. Like, it's crazy how instrumental roads are in our modern-day, like, Jim Crow systems. Like, this is a direct, like, zoning and freeways are a direct policy legacy of Jim Crow, and we live with their consequences today. You could argue that like they were the best Jim Crow laws. Like, yeah, keeping black people from voting was pretty good, but like if you just build them into a urban prison, that's better. Like, it did a better job of keeping them down.
And it did a better job of keeping white America feeling like they could still be patriotic and be proud of the place that they lived and proud of themselves, because it hides it.
It insulates us
from each other. And we've become more and more insulated as they give us, you know, the power to access all versions of porn in our fingertips, right? And keep us in our goon caves 24/7. But the car came first in that equation.
Yeah, it's like the internet helped, but really it's the physical separation of our communities. Like in Austin, you would not know where the black neighborhood is if you weren't looking for it. You would never have a reason to go there. You might drive through it twice a day for 20 years, but you'd never actually see it.
Or get out and meet your neighbors that live there. Yeah, and I think that's a potential benefit of the interconnectedness of the world outside of physical space, is maybe we can use it to bridge the gaps between the barriers that they've built, or across the barriers that they've built between us. That's what I hope for. That's my dream. And I think that MLK would agree that we have not achieved the vision for freedom and equality and fraternity that we could. I think it is noble to have a dream, and I think that we can't forget that though that dream is constantly attacked, and sometimes in the form of assassination, literally, we have to continue to dream and take care of each other and make the world a better place.
They got our boy.
Yeah.
I'm not even huge on MLK. Like, he's, yeah, like, not in like a racist
way. You're
going
to say that today?
No, but I mean, he's just not my favorite civil rights.
You come today of all days, like, and tell me.
I mean, he wasn't much of a leftist, you dig?
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm more Malcolm X or, you know, James Baldwin even. I mean,
Jimmy B is, he's very near and dear to my heart. Just being a queer person and who like had the prudent, he had the foresight to flee the violence of American society. And as a result, he got to die in peace, right? Like he got to live his life. They didn't fucking kill him. It's just, there's just nothing funny about it. I feel bad. I think maybe it's just sort of a fear of social stigma. That like, oh, we sort of don't want to riff on this.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I want any black listeners out there to let us know if we've crossed a line or if we can do better. But
I feel like we owe it to our black listeners to riff about this. I mean, it's a very dark podcast.
Yeah,
I feel like it's the most equitable thing to do. is to not make this one a real tearjerker.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It occurs to me that I want to talk about hip hop and how
hip hop, hip to the hop, hip hip.
That's
I know hip hop.
Yeah, there you go. You got Sugar Hill Gang. You got it.
I know hip hop.
Yeah, I mean, so hip hop, you know, was a movement that came out of the 70s in New York City, and it was a way for black people to celebrate and to express joy and to party, and it grew into this movement as, you know, crack was introduced in neighborhoods. And I mean, the situation in the Bronx, like seeing footage in the Bronx and in parts of Queens and Brooklyn in the 80s and 90s, like these were really extremely disenfranchised places that were direct remnants of the neighborhoods that were torn apart by Robert Moses and urban renewal. And these, among all of the other pieces of violence, like crack being introduced into the streets by the US government, you know, like there's so much to unpack there. And hip hop, you know, in the 90s and as it became commercialized, and I think as we think of it in the 2000s through today, became pimped and turned into this art form that, you know, holds so much. And I love hip hop. I love so much contemporary hip hop. But I want to like focus in on 1990 in New York City. I want to focus in on Boogie Down Productions and KRS-One and what they were doing, which was making revolutionary music that was trying to unite people around pushing back against violence and segregation. And the 1990 album Edutainment is, I've been bumping it constantly because it's like clearly anti-government, it's pro-black, it's blatantly an African revolutionary experiment. And I think that in the context of Martin Luther King. 1990 is like right in the middle between when they killed him and the 2020s where we're living now. And we've continued to lose touch with that revolutionary spirit. And, you know, the protests and everything around George Floyd's murder in 2020. I mean, I was in St. Louis when they killed Mike Brown, was a part of those protests. Like, these things happen at the local level, and there is resistance at the local level. But in our media, we just don't have this this unification. And I think it's sad that we've lost that in a lot of hip hop. And I think that if you want to listen to a really pro-black album, a really powerful black album to celebrate Martin Luther King Day, I would recommend BDP's Edutainment.
Bro, this episode sucks. There's nothing funny about the history of urban segregation. Like, this is our best work as Jim Crow racists. Like, this is our best work because it transcends like geography. It transcends, you know, the South, the North. It's like we did it everywhere. It was really effective. It's basically crushed black communities all over America. It's big fucked up. It's big fucked up, and it's not funny. And we slap MLK's name on your local red line and call it a day. Because we solved racism, guys. We did it.
Brother.
Bonkers, brother. Did I ever tell you about that time I brothered a lady on the bus, like a black lady on the bus, and she's like, I'm not your brother. And then I just got off the bus at the next stop.
That's rough. Why did you do that?
I thought she was a dude.
Oh, yeah. Well,
not my proudest moment. Not my proudest moment.
I just call, I always call the bus driver father.
Do you remember when they called me Black Culture Ben?
I have a vague memory of that. I think I've probably like trauma erased it.
That was a nickname I was trying to get going for myself.
Maybe someday, buddy. Yeah, bus driver. I always call a bus driver father or mother. Oh, powerful one. Thank you, Mr. Operator. They don't pay bus drivers enough.
Yeah, bro. Hardest job in America. So it wouldn't be a black episode without a little music, would it?
No, considering that the KRS goes into this in Edutainment, that all music is black music. And when you have something called the American Music Awards, you have what is called theft. I've got one more thing on my list, and I've got
something prepared.
If you want to just score me as
I'll
go.
I'll score you, baby. Get in there.
Okay. Awesome. So I wanted to talk to you, listener. In the news this week, we had our dear leader, our presidente, Mr. Trump, flipping off an auto worker. You know, it's like, fuck you, because this auto worker at a Ford plant shouted at him, and you know, our irreverent king decided to you know, flip him off. It was a funny little moment, right? But I was just thinking about like why Trump was there and what the auto industry represents and what regulations around the auto industry represent, especially on today of all days, where we know that the construction of freeways and the vast majority of our built environment has been catered toward cars in a racist fashion, right? Those two things are inextricable, the racism and the development of the freeways. And I want to call out the institutional and cultural failure of allowing the terms of the conversation to be around common sense, because that's what the government is saying right now, is that we have to roll back EV mandates. We need to roll back emission standards so that, you know, 35 miles a gallon is good enough, because that's what the consumer wants, right? And it's common sense that we need to do this. And I dream of a culture where we can have a good faith argument about common sense. I thought it was common sense in the world to not want to kill people. But the common sense of our culture is what is convenient and comfortable for the few at the expense of lesser human beings. Like, that is That is what is common sense in our culture. And like, what should make common sense to us is a transportation network where grandma can feel safe getting to the grocery store, and her bridge club and her religious institution and her water aerobics lesson, right? Without personally operating a piece of heavy machinery or risking being killed by another person operating a piece of heavy machinery. Like, that's common sense. And I, today of all days, am deeply sad at the state of things in our world that is increasingly violent and senseless.
Stop the violence!
It's MLK Day. It's what he would have wanted. It's what he would have wanted. It's what he would have wanted. Oh, just, okay. It's what he would have wanted. It's what he would have wanted. It's what he would have wanted. Jesus!
We had to cut this part out because it was essentially it is a racial caricature akin to the minstrel that we discussed earlier in the episode. But you get the idea of what's going on here.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough. That's more than enough.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if that'll make the final cut. Okay. MLK. MLK, it's easy as 1, 2, 3. An assemble is MLK, 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 baby, you and me, girl. You know that one?
Oh yeah, I know that one.
Okay. Well, what we got? We just got to do a song, and then we can end the episode. So yeah, you give me a song and then I'll do it. Give me a prompt. Like, what is MLK doing? What does he want? I have a dream
that the world will be full of scooters. I have a dream. Scoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-be-doo-doo. I have a dream.
That the gooners will take back the streets in the dead of night.
That's right, Lucas, that's right.
I have a dream that the gooners will take back the streets in the dead of night. I have a dream. That the gooners will take back the streets in the dead of night.
Good. Yeah, fuck yeah. Now, I think we actually touched on everything I wanted to touch on, which was definitely going to be a challenge. I mean, this is a fucked up subject. And I mean, we kind of touch on it all the time. This is a racial issue. Car crash deaths is a racial issue. And Martin Luther King wouldn't have wanted his name on like a shitty murder boulevard. Stop destroying black communities with high-speed roads. Stop doing that, government. Government, stop keeping the black man down.
Yeah, stop.
Like, this is the most material manifestation of white supremacy in a public institution that exists in the current day, and we must stop it. We have a moral imperative to stop it as citizens of our communities, of our
as
country.
Christians.
Fuck that shit.
He was the Reverend Doctor Martin Luther King Jr.
That's true. That's true.
If you do have a religious feeling, whether it's towards Martin Luther King Jr. or Jesus Christ or the Prophet Muhammad or whomever, shouldn't that make you want to take back the streets and make your neighborhood safer? After what you've listened to just now, listener, it's something that we could do concretely to make our world less violent, more in line with the dreams of those people that we idolize, that embody and symbolize our hope and our love and our joy.
Yeah. Bingo. All right, bingo, bango,
so
bongo.
So please be safe out there.
That's a podcast.
Bingo, bango, bongo. This is another episode of Are You Into Bus Stuff, the only comedy podcast about traffic deaths. You can find us on Patreon, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on our website, as always. You can also find us on Patreon, where you can subscribe and access a direct chat with us, as well as give us money if you want. Really appreciate you being here, listener. You know, sooner ask you to invest in your own community before you invest in us, but, you know, we are... I don't have a washer or dryer in my apartment, so... And I do have to give the machine money when I do my laundry, so if you could, like, pay for me to do my laundry, that would be sick.
Oh my god. I just wish we could include the gospel part. It's so funny. I just wish we could include the gospel part.
We could pay wallet.
I don't know, man. That's if we publish it, it's coming out. You know, it'll be our downfall. If anything, will be our downfall.
Our downfall from what? We were already at the bottom.
Yeah, man, fuck this shit. No, I mean, like, it's just sad. There's nothing funny about this. It's sad. I mean, there's nothing funny about car crash deaths. But, like, I think we've discussed before. This is a class issue. This is a race issue. This is the only real political issue. Gabagool, gabagooner.
So, yeah, walk to the grocery store. Don't ride your bike to the park. Say hello to one of your neighbors.
Don't hit any black people with your car this week. For do it for him.
That's good advice. Yeah, do it for him.
Do it for him. They got our boy!
All right, listener, be safe. Until next time, we'll see you next week. We may have a listener, or we may have a guest next week. More to come. Keep an eye out for the next episode, featuring maybe one of your favorite media figures.
Hell yeah. I didn't even know that. Fuck yeah. Okay. I love you, bro. I'll talk to you soon. I'm going to go on this bike ride.
Love you. Bye.
Hit me with your car. Go on and hit me with your car. Hit me with your car and drive away. Hit me with your car. Go on and hit me with your car. Hit me with your car and drive away. Hit me with your car. Go on and hit me with your car. Hit me with your car and drive away. Hit me with your car. Go on and hit me with your car. Hit me with your car and drive away. Hit me with your car, baby.